Welcome to the Melrose Place podcast, where we rewatch, recap, and analyze every episode of the hit 90s TV series Melrose Place.
I am Daniel Hill.
And I'm Jennifer Hill.
Let's get started. Episode 8, Dial M for Melrose. Air date October 23rd, 1995. Assuming this is a play on
Dial M for Murder.
Dial M for Murder. I never saw that movie.
Oh, really?
Is it good?
You know, I think I saw it in a film class when I was studying like in Australia in like 2005. So it was a long time ago.
Dial M for Murder.
It's an Alfred Hitchcock movie, right?
It came out in 1954. A tennis player frames his unfaithful wife for first-degree murder after she inadvertently hinders his plan to kill her.
Ooh.
So, I thought they remade this, too. I feel like they remade this.
I don't know.
I kind of want to watch it, though. So we start this episode off in basically that scenario. Jack Parisi's house is amazing.
How did he get this house?
Can he come kidnap me?
It's a mansion.
It's the best.
And it's crazy because we're always hearing from Amanda like, oh, he has all these like powerful people and scary people around him. Where are they?
And they're all in their rooms. Hey, Mr. Parisi. Thanks for letting me stay here.
Can I have another sandwich?
He's got his own wing. Shit. I'm trying to get in the cable industry. We're going to start doing cable.
We're going to have a new cable system.
I got to install a new cable system. Did I tell you my middle name is Time Warner?
So we literally start this episode with Jack holding on to Amanda's wrist and kind of like forcing her to be like, Amanda, you're mine. And she's fighting him off and saying, Jack, you're hurting me, please. And he is just like, you are going to stay here. You're my wife. And so she
I don't want to hurt you. Unless you force me
unless
to.
You make me. So she somehow gets away from his grasp and she
kicks him.
Yeah, she kicks. This is a lot of stage combat happening.
You want me to go? I got the hand-to-hand combat.
Down.
All right. So here's how it goes down. Amanda kicks him and then she runs upstairs.
Why?
That's the dumbest thing to do in a horror movie.
Go outside.
Yeah. So she runs upstairs, mistake one. Why do they always run upstairs? Then Jack like chases her up there and he's like, hey, let's have sex.
Well, first she runs into a bedroom and then she's like completely like she stops. It's like all sense of urgency is like dropped and she just like stops and like saunters into the bedroom. There on the bed, she sees a silky piece of lingerie laying there. Jack creepily comes up behind her and is like, oh, does that look familiar, Amanda?
Yo, and all right, let's put this into perspective. Amanda, in his mind, up until like a couple weeks ago, was completely dead. He still has that shit?
Dan, of course.
It's been years.
Five.
It's been five years. Time to throw away the lingerie
that
she had on your wedding night.
Yeah, well, that's the kicker. It's what she wore on their wedding night.
Yeah.
And he says, you're going to put that on and you're going to love me and tell me that I'm the only one for you.
Boom.
All night.
He puts that around her neck. Amanda gets up. She then gets punched. She falls to the ground and gets knocked into some golf clubs. She then whips out a golf club. Jack comes over. She then whacks him in the knee with one of the golf clubs while she's down. And then his legs give out from under him. She takes this time to run out of the room. Amazing stage combat. She trips and falls by the banister. And then he's running after her and he's like, "Get back here, you bitch."
So he's in the hallway now. She's on the ground in the hallway.
But she starts getting up as he lunges towards her. And whoops, my man goes over the railing, over the banister. And not only does he hit the ground, but on the way down, he bashes into the chandelier that explodes.
Well, can we talk, Dan? It's not only that he just like goes over the railing. It is like he is propelled by a springboard. Like Amanda,
she like
is like springing him over, and he's doing a swan dive down, which, like you said,
it's like
crashes midway into the chandelier, which then has like it's like an explosion.
I want you all to take a second and Google what a barrel roll is, because that's what happened here. Like if you run at somebody and they're like crouched down and you like you get like you like flip over them, you roll over them, and then at a certain point you're both are back to back, but one person is on top of the other. And then
know.
You roll over. It's a barrel roll. I did that shit in Urinetown with Ryan. You like run at the person. That person has their hands on their knees with their back flat, and you sort of roll over them.
Mm-hmm.
But and in doing that, the person who has their hands on their knees who's propelling you needs to like jerk up a little bit so you have enough
momentum
to go also go up and then complete your roll off of their back. Guys, that's what happened here. And Jack plummets to what we can assume is his death.
Now, he is laying face first.
No blood.
Shattered glass. And it looks like a marble tile floor.
Not a drop of blood.
No blood. He doesn't land in like a weird way where it's like obvious that he has broken limbs or anything. He's just right there face down.
Listeners, I think that Jess Hansen fell from less.
And died.
He was splattered.
This was like three stories up.
Yeah.
It wasn't a regular like, second story. It was like three.
And his face broke his fall.
Yeah.
His brains
should be splattered.
All up on the motherfucker.
Now, Amanda looks down and she goes downstairs to kind of assess the situation. Picks up the phone and you're thinking, well, obviously she's calling 911.
Naturally.
No.
Mm-mm.
You know who her first call is?
Who is it, Jenny?
It's freaking Peter.
Son of a bitch.
What in the world? I mean, based on what was it, last episode or the episode before when she takes Billy to the security lockbox to say he is the only one that she can trust?
Yeah.
If you're going to call someone to like,
she's far removed from that, because throughout this episode, she doesn't not tell anyone what's going on.
It's insane to me. Like
the mailman walks by and she's like, oh, by the way, that's Jack. He used to kick my ass.
He's my husband. It's insane. And do I have to even remind you that Peter tried to freaking hostile her and take her organs out?
Yeah. He had a syringe with appendicitis in it, and he stuck it in her, and then tried to murder her.
But,
and was saved by Michael Mancini.
Okay, fine.
She calls Peter. She's like, all right, she calls Peter from a landline, for one, which is a big time no-no, as far as like phone records, and like who you called first, that sort of stuff.
Great point.
You know, she calls from the landline. She's like, Peter, there's been an accident. I need your help. I think he's dead. Peter's like, is he dead? She's like, I think. Like, you don't know? You don't know how to check that? This is absolutely malarkey. And I don't use that word a lot. But this is...
But truly, that's what it is.
Malarkey. So Peter's like, I'll be right there.
Then we cut to the opening credits.
And then... So we get the credits. We come back. And this is by far the worst song.
Yeah, ever. It's like a strange, like, Carole King, Joni Mitchell, like, ripoff that, it's and like, again,
how do you find love?
Who knows if this is, I don't think it's the same music that aired when it was on back in the 90s, but this is what we're seeing now, and it's terrible. It's totally, like, the opposite vibe of what we usually see.
Yeah, I feel like when they were putting this together for Hulu, once all the music royalties like ran out, they were just like grabbing people, like, just, "Hey, get in here! can you lay down something for us? We got this guitar, and we found this guy outside. He can play the bass.
Let's do this. You guys good?"
And it's like, "Well, I made up a song when I was 7. Get in here. Let's do it."
So Peter has arrived at Jack's palatial mansion, mm-hmm. and he is assessing the situation. He sees Jack face down.
And Amanda's like, is he dead? And then Peter says, he's not dead yet. What?
Now, they're kind of like, what do we do? So Peter is trying to push Amanda to call an ambulance because he's going to need medical attention or else he's going to die. Now, Amanda tries to explain, he trapped me here, he attacked me, we fought, he fell. I can't call the authorities because if I do, I'm going to be implicated in some terrible stuff. Like, this guy beat me every day that I was married to him, and we need to keep this quiet.
So Peter's resolution is, all right, I'm going to have him admitted to the hospital under my care. Amanda, you go home and you stay there and you don't say shit.
Don't go anywhere. Don't say anything to anybody. We got to get our stories straight.
Right.
And then I'll contact you.
And I'm like, how the hell is this story going to be straight when the ambulance arrives and Peter's the only one there and he says, load him up. He's under my care.
And, okay, is that something that you can do as a doctor? And, Dan, is he a doctor with rights at Wilshire Memorial? This is something that we haven't yet cleared up.
He got his license to practice medicine revoked once he tried to steal Amanda's organs. Then he went to jail. Then Kimberly and Michael testified to get him his license back.
Which he did. But right. It was never established that he was working back at Wilshire Memorial, only that he opened a private practice.
But it's Wilshire's like business location.
There's been many episodes that he's just been like hanging out in the hallways of Wilshire Memorial.
They call it like the business park of Wilshire Memorial. It's like Disneyland.
What?
Like Wilshire Memorial is Disney World. Disneyland is their office.
But they're like on opposite coasts.
Right, but it's just like it's a junior. It's like a sector.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't think that's right.
It's like Audi is Audi, but they also make BMWs.
Okay.
You know? It's a luxury line.
Okay. I'm gonna just move on now.
He can do medicine. So how Peter cleans this up, I have no idea. But we cut over to Joe and Richard. They're hanging out in Joe's place.
They're looking at some photos that Joe took of Richard's new line.
This line, dude. I want to see more of the line.
I know, more sketches.
Yeah.
And I don't know, Richard is being very flirty and very like touchy-feely.
Yeah. Like, he's like, I got to tell you, man, these pictures look great. Joe's like, oh, thanks,
but
Richard.
But he's like stroking her face while he's saying it.
Yeah.
It's like, I remember him like touching her and stuff, being like, yeah, Joe.
He does.
Good job with the photos.
Yeah, he does touch her. But Jake, he strolls up to see what's going on.
And he walks in on the touching.
Yeah, he witnesses the awkward face touch. And Jake. So Jake's a little taken back by this. And instead of what we normally see, Jake is like, you know what? I'm going to go back downstairs.
Now, Joe detects that he's got a little bit of jealousy that he doesn't necessarily like seeing Joe in this compromising position with Richard. So she follows after him and tries to convince him to come back up. He's like, no, I'm going to go back. I'm going to go to my place. She goes back into her place. And then Richard is like, all right, Joe, well, I'm going to take off. But nice seeing you. Good night. And he kisses her on the hand.
But like playfully.
Like,
he's like, goodbye, my darling.
Like, goodbye, my lady. But it's just like very weird. And really, after Jake kind of came in and had that really awkward like thing, like that was something that was palpable in the room. So why would he like touch her again?
I don't know, because something's there.
Something's there.
They're playing
it's
with
brewing.
It.
Brewing.
We knew it. We called it. Something. Mm-hmm. Something's a brewing.
Something a lot like the next scene where Kimberly is brewing coffee.
Oh, we didn't
nice
even.
Nice segue.
We didn't even mean to do that.
Oh.
Yeah, so Kimberly is making coffee and listening to like a very weird portable radio.
It's like an old jukebox, but shrunk down to like a little miniature size.
It's more than strange, but she comes upstairs. She's like, Peter, where are you? And she gets a note that Peter had to go in early. She's
a
little pissed.
She sees the note that he's like, sorry, I'm not going to be home. And this is when I asked you, okay, remember when Amanda called the previous night to be like, I need you, Peter, to help me?
Yeah. She was right
there. She was right next to him. So wouldn't you think at that time he would be like, Kimberly, I have to go out. I have something to do. So why would he leave her a note? I mean, I presume he hasn't been home because he was like at the hospital with Jack.
Well, I don't know. I didn't have a problem with that because he's a doctor. She knows the doctor-y things. And like when you're on call and you can be called up at any moment and have to go like take care of a patient or whatever. So I think that's fine.
Okay. Well, she flips on the radio and Dr. Joyce Brothers is back. And
RIP.
And okay, I gotta ask too. We've now seen Joyce Brothers' show being on like late night.
DJB.
It's early morning now. Is there a radio station that just plays
on
her
loop.
Show like DJ, 24 hours a day?
DJB on loop.
That's all it is.
I think it's live calls at night, and then they like probably replay the recordings.
I don't, maybe, because usually you have like a time slot and a specific day that your show is on. But
you guess
she's on all the time.
They replay Coast to Coast.
They do back to back. Yeah, you're right. I do listen to a lot of Coast to Coast, and they do that.
Gotta love that DJB. She's in high demand, 24 hours. So she's listening again, and she looks up, and she sees fucking Henry.
Fake Henry has made an appearance. He's just standing inside, like outside of the window, just looking in at her.
Looking dumb. Like, not. He doesn't look scary. He looks stupid.
Well, Dan,
like,
I'd be
like sad for this guy.
I mean, he's devoted his life to making her life terrible. Is he sleeping in his car? Is he sleeping at all? We don't know.
I don't think he's sleeping at all.
He's just always there. He's basically stalking her. I mean, the conditions and under what she's working under are probably really tough.
Yeah, this is more than method acting at this point.
Yeah, so he's just like standing there looking after her. And she, again, tries to talk herself into being like, you're not real. Leave me alone. But something causes her to be like, you know what? I'm going to investigate this.
Yeah. So she goes outside and she tries to see where he went. And she finds footprints of like raw sewage.
Yeah, I was going to say, firstly, there is a huge patch of mud that looks like it looks like raw sewage.
Yeah.
And this is in Peter's backyard.
Looks like manure.
Like, what is this doing in his backyard? It never rains in LA.
It's weird.
And it's very muddy. And then she sees that there are footprints on the patio leading from this little mud patch. And that she deduces from that that he isn't a figment of my imagination. He's a real person. And this gives her relief. But if I were her, I would be absolutely terrified because he's a real person.
So do you think... I meant to ask you this. Do you think that she meant that she knows it's a hoax, or does she then know that Henry is real? Like, does it feed into her crazy, or does it give her validation that, like, that it might just be a hoaxy thing?
No, I think it gives her validation that she's not crazy, that this is a real person and not a figment of her imagination.
Right, because she does seem happy.
She's relieved that she's not delusional, that she's not seeing these visions that aren't there.
Yeah.
But my thing is, okay, that like there's still a problem. There's a strange man that looks awfully like the person that you've conjured up in your brain that is basically stalking you.
Right, but it's the lesser of two evils. I feel.
I guess.
Would you rather...
One can murder you, one can just drive you crazy in your brain.
Well, would you rather be stalked in your brain and be a psycho? Or would you rather, like, somebody, like, be watching you?
Stalked in my brain.
You would want to be a crazy, insane person forever?
I would want to be crazy.
I'd be like, great, I can deal with this freak. But, like, internally, if someone's upstairs in your noggin, in your noodle...
Maybe not. I just have so many fears already of people, like, of getting murdered. I think this just plays into it. Like, sure. My fears.
Kimberly's got this, like, purple with black trim, really comfy-looking robe. Like, I'm jealous. This robe is up there.
Your birthday's coming up.
This robe is up there with... Oh, yeah. Where did our robes go? We used to have a lot of robes.
What?
Remember the...
The ones that we stole from that resort?
The Barcelo robes.
Barcelo.
Where did those go?
I don't know.
That was a nice robe.
I don't know. They're gone.
I need a robe, guys. I'm a robe guy.
Okay. I don't know if that's good or bad.
I need a robe. A nice, comfy one. Mark it. In your calendars.
Okay. So next up, we are back at Wilshire Memorial, and Peter is tending to Jack, his number one patient, still in very serious condition. Now, Amanda barges into Wilshire Memorial, completely going against Peter's instructions to stay at home and wait for his instructions, and he is not happy to see her.
Yeah, he's like, what are you doing here, Amanda? I need you to go home. I need you to confirm with me that I did the right thing here. And now this is where Amanda first goes on the sympathy tour and is like, oh, Peter, Jack used to kick my ass.
Jack started beating me. He is a very dangerous and he has a very powerful friends and family. With my father's help, I was able to fake my own death and then move out of Florida and come here to California. The thing is, there's an insurance policy out on me, and when I died, it was paid out to Jack. So it's insurance fraud, and you see, that's why we can't let anybody know that I'm really alive and I'm a... trying to risk your medical license again and everything else to make up this insane story that if anybody knew the truth, I wouldn't be in trouble anyway.
And Peter's like, I see.
Well, and that's and Dan, okay.
The cops would be there already. And you can't just come into a hospital and like all fucked up. And no one asked any questions.
They're trying to be like, oh, he had a simple fall. But, okay, here is where this falls apart for me, okay? This whole thing, the reason why Amanda's like, I can't call the police, we have to keep this hush-hush, is because of this life insurance policy, right?
Right.
However, they already know she's alive. they are going through divorce proceedings right now. So there is a record of Amanda Woodward, the one that was married to Jack Parisi, now getting divorced from Jack Parisi. That's going to be out there in the ether. Okay.
Yeah, that's already so on the books.
Why in the world? Like, and I think if a battered woman tried to plead their case to a policeman or somebody that's trying to go after her to be like, oh, well, we paid out life insurance on you, to say, I was getting beat daily and I was afraid for my life. This was the only way out that I saw. And she could pay the money back. Big deal. Why live in fear for the rest of your life? And here's the other thing.
Whose identity is Amanda Woodward?
I think it's her identity. That is her maiden name. Unless Palmer completely changed his name too.
Right.
And that's never been clear. So I'm just like, why aren't we calling the police? Why are we keeping this hush hush? And it's like they keep talking about like the powerful friends and family. Where are they?
In the wings of his
this
house.
This is the guy. This guy's in the hospital almost on his deathbed. And we'll get into it because the lawyer knows where he is.
Mr. Diamond.
But where's everybody else?
So
I'm sorry. This is just this plot point is really just getting under my skin.
Mr. Diamond enters the conversation. Now, if you remember, this is the guy who was on the elevator with Jack talking like, hey, you know there's no wife, right?
He's like,
what are you doing?
Why are you wanting to divorce her? I know you still love her.
Yeah. Well, he wants to know what happened. And then Peter explains to Mr. Diamond like what
this very plausible symptoms. Story.
He's like, he has bleeding on the brain.
No, he's like, well, it just so happens that I was supposed to go over to Jack's mansion last night after we talked at a party about a business venture. The only thing is, when I arrived, no one came to the door, so I let myself in and he was just laying on the floor.
Must be bleeding on the brain. He has bleeding on the brain.
Okay, what's that?
Love on the Brain. Rihanna song.
Oh.
You got me like,
okay.
Must be blood on the brain.
Is that a lyric to that song?
She says love on the brain instead of blood on the brain.
Okay, I'm sorry. I guess you lost
Blood
me.
On the brain.
Okay.
So Nick Diamond is played by Morgan Stevens. He was in Fame.
I'm gonna live forever.
He played David Reardon in Fame. And he's in Bare Essence, where he plays a young Larry DeVito. He's also in Walker, Texas Ranger.
Oh, your which fave.
I absolutely fucking love.
Dan has every single... You have all the seasons, don't you?
No, I don't. I have seasons 1 and 2.
Well, guys...
I was this close. It was Melrose or Walker podcast.
It would have been a very different podcast. And I would not have been the co-host. So.
Little fun fact for you. Hey, you're welcome, Melrose Place fans. So, Mr. Diamond, there's something about him that is disgusting to me.
He's very off-putting.
He's like a nasty person. I'm not into him. I don't want to be friends with him.
He is not buying Peter's story. And he's like, oh, well, how lucky that you were there.
He's like, I'll get to the end of this, sir. He's like a cartoon villain. I don't like him.
So this whole story is so dumb. Like, it does not add up. And it's so transparent. And the lawyer is like, well, sorry, Amanda, for all of your loss and everything, and hopefully, you know, we'll
he
be
keeps
able
calling
to
her
all
like
this.
Mrs. Parisi.
Okay,
too.
Mrs. Parisi.
And Amanda she's so scared for when Jack wakes up and Peter says, well, with any luck, he may never wake up. Like, thanks, doctor.
Okay, so we now cut to Allison and Haley, who are having dinner with Brooke and Billy at Haley's estate.
At the Armstrong house.
And they wanted to clear the air and just be out in the open to say, we're a couple, you're a couple, we didn't get together to hurt you.
Oh, it's so weird.
But we're in love.
This conversation reminded me of when, like, my parents told me they were getting a divorce.
It's super awkward. And it's like, so Allison weird. Is like, Billy, I don't want to lose you as a friend. And Haley's like, Brooke, I don't want to lose you as a daughter.
Neither of us want to hurt you. And then at dinner, Billy and Brooke are cool. How is anyone cool with this?
I wouldn't even go to dinner, number one.
Billy's like, I'm happy for you.
It's so weird. And Dan, did you notice in the background they have like all of their hired help like walking around? They're like maids and butlers and waiters and stuff.
I can't get past the fact that Allison has had sex with both guys at the table. You know?
Yeah.
It's just like, ugh, what? What's happening?
Now,
I'm on Brooke's side here. She's like, this is fucking sick.
Well, Brooke is like, well, it's getting late and I think we should go, but I hope you're both happy. And then Billy gets up and he's like, yeah, be happy. Like, so stupid.
Be happy. And then Allison's like kind of sad. And Haley, oh, this makes me want to puke. Like, Allison gets up and, like, sits in Haley's lap.
Well, because she's forlorn. And he's like, oh, well, they took it rather well, didn't they? And she's like, I just didn't want to hurt them like that. And he's like, oh, they're there. We haven't lost them, have we, pal? And then she's, like, sitting in his lap, like you said.
He says, and I quote, you are the most wonderful woman I've ever met in my life.
And I am so in love with you. And then he also says, I'll do whatever it takes to keep them in our lives.
This is happening.
Why?
So fast.
Why do you want to? Like, I don't understand why you need to like jam your relationship down their throat.
Yeah, your kid's grown.
Do you have to hang out with them like all the time and have dinner on a regular basis?
It's like if your parents are divorced and they still try to like play nice like for you. It's like y'all don't have to do that anymore. I'm like a grown ass adult. Like,
it's weird.
Y'all can fight. Y'all can not be in the same room. It's cool. But this is happening way too fast. I'm scared for Allison, but I understand it. And this is, it's good. It's her character flaw. She does come from a really screwed up past where
she has daddy issues,
her dad abused her. She's been in several relationships where the guy is older. So like this is right on par for the course with Allison. Now we cut to Brooke and Billy in their apartment, which looks like a frat room. Like a guy,
it's
like
the
a college guy
that really like throw me off.
I wouldn't be like if they like panned upwards as they were laying down and it was revealed that the bed they were in was like a race car bed. I'd be like, of course, I'd be like, sure. That's
yeah. So they're kind of like commiserating about the evening and agreeing that that wasn't easy to have to see, you know, Billy's ex-fiance and Brooke's father together. Mm-hmm. And like, it wasn't easy. But then they start like getting busy. They start making out.
Billy doesn't care. He's like, life goes on. It's whatever. And they start making out.
Okay. This is the grossest part of the episode. Ugh. Dan, would you like to do the honors of what Billy says to Brooke?
They're hooking up. We got the side boob going for Brooke. I'm happy. It's all good. And then Billy has to ruin it with,
you better put in your diaphragm.
Just want to reach into the TV and fucking slap the shit out of him.
So Brooke gets up and she's like, oh, good idea. She goes into the bathroom. She takes out her diaphragm case. And then on second thought, she looks into the mirror and she's like, I can trap him. And she doesn't put the diaphragm in, puts it back, and then goes back into the bedroom like all is well. She's good to go. And they're not at risk of having a baby.
Ugh. That's really messed up.
Yeah.
It's pretty damn messed up. So now we go to the hospital. We're in Jack's room.
And Amanda's just hanging out in there. Why? Why is she there? For a woman who's deathly afraid of her ex-husband.
Who tried to catch a plane and run away from him.
She's around him all the time. Get away.
Jack.
And she's like, no one can know I was involved. No one can know I'm married to him. No one can know anything. Then why are you around him at all times?
Yeah, she likes it. So Jack, he wakes up while she's in there and he says that Amanda, he's got her right where he wants her and that she's scared.
And he's like, you're worried. I can tell. I know you're worried about me, but it's okay. Because when I get through this, you're going to be with me forever.
And he's like, no.
Or I'll kill you.
And he's like, no one's going to believe you. You won't leave. You can't. Or I'll just have to kill you.
So then Peter comes in.
Why doesn't she just pull the plug?
I know. There's so many things. There's so many things that could happen.
Hit him with the paddles.
It's so stupid. And then Peter comes in and he's like, Amanda, what are you doing here again? And she's like, he woke up. He told me he's going to kill me. And he's like, okay, he didn't wake up.
And he says, don't worry. I won't let that happen.
Like, how? You're literally nursing him back to health.
Yeah. And then, so they leave the room and Michael comes around and he requests the chart from Jack's room.
Because it is odd that this man has shown up overnight having a harmless fall that he's in now almost critical condition. And freaking Amanda's hanging out in his room.
Yeah. So
it's suspect.
So Michael looks at the chart and by his reaction, which is like him sort of sneering and smiling, he knows that something's up with
yeah,
the chart.
Yeah, it's like there's a light bulb goes off and he's like, how can I use this as leverage against Peter and Amanda?
I think he looks at it and he's like, Peter's up to his old tricks again. Looks like he's going to try to get that kidney and sell it on the black market.
Okay, so next up, we've got Jane and Allison, and they're going for a jog out in the neighborhood. And they're talking about their love life, and Allison is explaining to Jane about the dynamic of her and Haley's relationship. She says that it started out as an act to drive a wedge between Brooke and Billy, but it suddenly just changed.
Fucked up.
Which I want to go back to say every time that Haley tried to like get with her, she kept saying, no, I don't want to try to get in the middle of their relationship. So I'm wondering why she's telling Jane that.
I don't know. Well, she's telling Jane that because Jane has been so open with Allison about being like a go-getter and to like just do what she wants.
Mm-hmm.
Remember when she was blind and she was like, just get naked in front of him.
I don't think
do
that
whatever
was,
you can.
I don't think that was the advice she gave her explicitly, but that's like, exactly what she did.
She's like, pretend you're blind. Seduce him.
So she's like, Haley makes me feel special and protected and loved, and I want to be with him, and it's great. And Jane's like, you know what? Go after that. Who cares about the relationship that he has to your ex-fiance? Yeah. Whatever.
Guys, while they're jogging, you need to check out the Easter eggs on the side of the street. At first, there's a shirtless guy who comes and like checks his mail, and then they run past this woman who is walking like a bear down the street. It's insane.
It's a very fluffy dog, but a very big dog.
Very big dog. I don't know how comfortable that dog is in that kind of heat. But I couldn't really get into this scene because it was such a heavy, like obviously voiceovered scene.
Why does that bother you?
Because like, I know it was redubbed because they sound like as they're running, they didn't sound like they were running and the sound was so perfect. I would rather like you remember Saved by the Bell?
Of course.
Do you remember like the when they were for the summer, they stayed at the at the beach club or
where
whatever.
Leah Remini's family owned the beach club or whatever, and she worked there.
Exactly, yeah. The Carosis.
Oh, sorry.
So those scenes, like those scenes in that show, they're on the beach. You could hear the ocean. You could hear them talking over it, and it was a little muffled because they were outdoors. I would rather that because at least it sounds right. But when they're running and it's voiceovered, they have to like fake this like like huff, like heavy breathing, and they sound perfect. So I'm like, this is bullshit, and I can't get past it.
Okay, well, the conversation shifts from Allison's love life to Jane's love life, and Jane tells Allison that her and Richard have called off their engagement, and this is the first that Allison is hearing of this, and she's like, well, what happened?
And it's all Joe's fault.
Right. Joe stuck her nose in where it didn't belong. She told Richard that I didn't love him, but I could learn to love him in time. I know that, and I know he's good for me, and now I'm still keeping my engagement ring on because I'm going to do what it takes to get back into his good graces and get back with him.
You know what's funny? Jane is describing like what it is to like meet someone and date them and like fall in love later. You know? Everything happens so fast in Melrose Place that like from the start you need to be in love and on your way to marriage.
Like within hours of being together.
She's describing like
how normal people know each other for like a couple years before they decide to get married.
I'd like to do that with.
Yeah, I'd like to kind of get to know him more.
And everyone's like, wow, you can't learn to love him. That's fucked
up. Oh, no, you've got to love him the second you lay eyes on him.
Yeah, Jane just wants to date.
Now, Allison says something very telling that's a bit foreboding. And she says, well, be careful what you wish for, Janie. And then she speeds up and kind of like runs a little bit ahead of her.
Who calls her Janie?
No one ever.
Hey, Janie.
And so I thought that that was kind of weird, like a little pet name that Allison has for her. But then I'm kind of like, well, what does that mean? Is that like foreshadowing to something that's going to happen, that she's going to get her wish and she's going to hate it or something?
Maybe.
I don't know.
Let's go to Shooters. Or should I say, Joe Complain Place. Jake is opening the bar, because that's what owners do of restaurants.
Yeah, you open and close every night.
He's taking down the stools. And you know what? From the working at bars, this is not a good practice. You shouldn't do this.
What do you mean?
Like, you wipe down the tables at night, right?
Mm-hmm.
You don't necessarily wipe down the seats. People have been farting in those seats all night.
Wait, excuse me?
And then you go put them up on the tabletops that you just cleaned?
Dan, everyone puts tables up like that, chairs up like that on
you
the
You shouldn't. Why? So because that you can mop?
You get the chairs out of the way to sweep and mop.
Right, but then...
You've worked in restaurants, too. You know how this goes.
But then they should come down. They shouldn't stay there all night.
Why?
Or you should move all the chairs somewhere else.
Why?
Mop.
Do you think that the fart particles are going to get on the table?
Absolutely.
You are so
dirty
weird.
As shit. It's dirty as
Who's
shit.
Who's farting in the seats?
Everyone. At a bar?
No.
Oh, Jenny. Farts are coming everywhere. Rapid fire. All the beer.
Is that what you do?
That's what everyone does.
I don't do that.
You're weird. I'm sorry. All the beer, all the bad food people are eating at bars, all the burgers.
They're just farting in their seats.
It's a farm for farts. But regardless, you shouldn't be putting that shit on the tabletop.
Okay. All right, I'm sorry.
So Jake is taking those down, and Joe walks in before opening. She says that the other night was strange and that Jake seemed pissed. And Jake was like, look, well, I'm not jealous. I was just sort of upset. And we need to, like, we're out of sync. And we need to, like, just hang out.
Yeah, so they're talking, and he is like, you know, you have been spending a lot of time with Richard. And she counters by saying, well, I've seen you with Shelly with their little floss bikini around and you like running after her like a little puppy dog. Mm-hmm. And she said, I was thinking about coming downstairs all night. I almost did it.
But my pride.
Yeah. And that's where he's like, well, that needs to change. We both are stubborn and we both need to change. We need to give a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And then Shelly comes in. She has a computer inside of a box that she's just carrying. And she's like, oh, hello, guys. Jake, get the rest of my shit out of my car, will you? And Jake's like, okay,
sure,
we'll do.
Of course. And she's like, yeah, I'm going to bring Jake into the 90s by putting payroll on this computer.
And Jake will use the computer. And Joe's like, oh, okay, great.
She's awesome.
Like, and doesn't Shelly like diss her with like computer tech?
Yeah, she's like, oh,
do
Joe,
you know about computers?
Do you know how to use a computer? And she's like, not really. And she was just like throwing shade at her.
But
and
then doesn't Joe say like computers are for losers?
Joe says, don't strangle yourself with all those cords. That's the kind of world I want to go back to. There are many things about the 90s that, you know, good riddance, but this whole crazy wave of technology and how we're so reliant upon it, I would love to go back into like the days where no one had a phone, no one had a computer. Like, it's all about human interaction.
I was a freshman in high school in 1996-97. And I remember my English teacher, I was in English honors.
Oh, what?
Yeah.
Hey.
Yeah, I'm good at words.
You smart, babe.
I was in the honors English.
You good at words.
Mm-hmm. And that was the first year that the teacher was like, when you write papers in my class, they need to be typed. And everyone was like,
what?
What? I can't type all my papers. How am I going to do that? So like, and we're all like, so we have to write it by hand and then we have to go type it? And you're going to like edit, like critique the typed words? We were freaking out. And like, I didn't have a computer.
I was
going to
say at that point, I think my family got a personal computer maybe 97, 98.
Yeah. That was a year after this class.
Yeah.
My mom had... It wasn't a computer and it wasn't a typewriter. So
it was like,
a
hybrid?
Yes. So like it had the keyboard like a computer, right?
Okay.
And that's it. And then it had like
Did it have a screen?
It had like a speak and spell screen almost.
Like that's called like a typewriter.
It was like a little line.
Like it had a digital display?
Yeah, but it was small, like a pager. It had like a pager digital display, and you could type an entire paper, right?
Uh-huh.
You type it all on there. You could save it and everything. And then at the end of it, you hit like print, and it would be like...
And it would print like a typewriter.
It would type your whole thing and like shoot it out.
Weird.
Yeah, it was weird. It was like pre-computer, you need to type things.
Yeah. Did you type your paper for English honors on that?
Yeah.
Piece of machinery.
That's what I did. And if you made a spelling mistake, it would be like, dee-dee.
Oh, it would tell you?
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty money.
You'd go back and edit it. But you had to look at like a screen that was like the size of a pager.
Whoa.
And you'd be like, what is that word? Oh. It was weird times. You want to go back to that?
Kind of.
I'm good.
I just like...
I'll see you. See you later. I'm sticking around. I'm sticking here.
Okay. So we are back at Wilshire Memorial where Michael is now tending to Jack. And the reason being is that the lawyer, Mr. Diamond, felt as though Peter may have some strange motives and may not be telling the full story about what's going on with Jack. So he felt more comfortable retaining Michael as his primary care physician, doctor, the person that's taking care of him.
Mm-hmm. And Michael starts gloating that he did this. And Peter takes his ass and throws him up against the wall.
Well, Michael is accusing Peter of doing something to Jack because, again, Michael does not understand the relationship that Amanda has to Jack. She doesn't know. He doesn't know that they're married. All he knows is here's a man seriously injured on his deathbed, and Peter's being all hush hush about it. This lawyer is sniffing around, and it seems as though Peter's up to his old tricks, and Michael wants to intervene.
I'm sick of Michael getting like physically abused.
Why?
He
deserves it most of the time.
I used to love Michael, but like he's such a little bitch. Like, Matt's kicked his ass countless times. People punch him in the stomach.
Dan, like people I think slam him into time walls. And time again, we have learned.
He's always like, "Get your hands off of me!" Like
Michael's
he needs to work out.
No, he is he's a mouthpiece. He's not the guy that's going to fight you, but he's going to try to go and get you somehow by some legal loophole or completely like setting a trap for you. He's not going to physically harm you, but he is going to like mess you up in other ways.
Yeah. So Peter slams him up and he's like, "Keep your mouth shut about Jack's injuries." And how can he? He's a doctor. Like, his injuries are obvious.
Yeah, and it's like, there's not just Jet. Like, Peter's not the only person working on him. He's got a team of people, nurses and other doctors. He can't be there 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
There's got to be other physicians, like, checking in on this guy.
So Kimberly, while all this is happening, is at home. She's cooling. She's talking to Dr. Joyce Brothers.
Because she's got that 24-hour show that's on the radio at all times.
Yeah.
And
she's cooking.
And Dan, the ease of which Kimberly can get into the line, that was another thing that really struck me.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, do you remember calling into radio stations and just getting the busy signal and then just calling back and back and back and back, trying to win those tickets or weigh in on like to one of these shows and talk to a radio host? I don't think I've ever gotten in.
Yeah.
But every time Kimberly calls, she gets the direct line to Dr. Joyce Brothers.
I called in and got Dodgers tickets. Remember that?
You did. I do remember that.
I was like,
and you were on the radio and we were like, "Whoa, you're a celebrity now."
Yeah, that's right. So she is cooking. She's got the phone on her shoulder. She's chatting it up with DJ B and
telling her her life story, basically about how everything was going great until she met Michael Mancini, uses his first and last name. Coincidentally, Michael is driving home listening to the radio. Dialed into Dr. Joyce Brothers' show.
He loves it, too.
Here's Kimberly knows, I mean, not just because she used his full name, but knows Kimberly's voice. He calls in and gets on the line, too.
And they're like, "We have a call. We're going to take another call." He's like, "Hello, caller. Who is this?" He's like, "Yeah, this is Fred." And then he just starts immediately talking shit.
Like launching it on Kimberly, like, "Hey, this broad sounds like she's a mutant. She sounds like she's crazy. She needs to be locked up in a padded cell and blah, blah, blah." And then, of course, Kimberly gets hip to the jive and she's like, "Oh, doctor, this seems to be my loving husband, Michael Mancini. Great to talk to you."
And then he goes on another tirade and he's like, "And then she had to come on and put a bomb in an apartment building because everybody was crazy, huh? Because a voice in her head." No, she, like, I think he calls him, like, the boogeyman.
The naughty people.
Because the boogeyman told her to kill all the naughty people. And then he gets hung up on. And then Michael starts, like, kicking the shit out of his car.
Like, he's really irate.
And he almost gets in an accident.
Again.
Oh, my God.
Okay, now, serious tone. We are back at the Fielding residence. Matt and Mom have just returned from Dad's funeral.
We called it. We thought we would never even... It would never even be a mention.
Yeah, we thought that, like, that would be it. But they are following this up. They're kind of talking about the service, talking about the dad, and really the only purpose of the scene is to reiterate that Matt has decided to go back to medical school.
He's going to do it, guys. We called it. We thought he would.
Okay, how many episodes is it going to take for him to be a doctor at Wilshire Memorial?
Three.
I'm going to say six.
Six?
It may be like, it may even bleed into mid-season finale.
He's probably going to meet another gentleman caller.
I just feel like
school.
He's going to go through, like, he'll go through like a couple episodes of schooling. And then by the end of this season, I really feel strongly that Dr. Matt Fielding is going to be employed at Wilshire Memorial, like before the end of season four.
If he is going to be a doctor, then who's going to do everything else?
I don't know.
At the hospital? Wilshire needs him. So, and he's all at this scene, he also promised his mother that she won't be lonely.
That's true.
He promises dad that the mom wouldn't be lonely.
Yeah. So Michael, in the conversation that Michael has with Peter, Peter does let it slip that Jack is Amanda's ex-husband, well, is her husband. So Michael takes it upon himself to go visit Amanda to kind of talk about like what's going on. Amanda, of course, thinks that he's going there to hit her up for money or try to blackmail her in some way. And she's like, look, what do you want? I don't have a lot of money left, but if I need to buy your silence, I'm willing to do that. And Michael really turns the corner and he's like, look, I used to care about you. I used to love you very much, and I don't want to see you hurt. And if this man did beat you and did treat you the way that you're claiming, then I will lie for you.
Now, I love this because it is in line with season one, Michael. Remember when his friend, his doctor friend, was beating up his wife?
Yep,
he called him out.
Yep,
he called him out. Even though it was a sticky situation, he like burned the bridge and called him out on
He did the right thing. He rarely does the right thing, but if somebody is getting abused, I think there is a limit to his depravity.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing that really stood out to me in this scene is that, where did this balcony, like French door, like New Orleans French Quarter balcony come from?
Amanda just threw that in.
I think maybe during the renovation, she was like, now in my apartment, I need to have a balcony overlooking the courtyard or wherever it overlooks.
They're like, ma'am, we looked at the blueprints and this wasn't here before. So, oh, no, it was. It was. That blew up.
Yeah.
That blew up.
We're going to need to put a big French door there so I can look out over my minions.
She's like, oh, what? Jack's paying? All right. I need some doors.
Yeah, we need to add this.
Nice addition. So we leave that scene. Michael is willing to corroborate the false story. And he leaves.
It's the next day, and we are back at the Armstrong estate, where Allison is sleeping in Haley's bed, and Haley is surprising her with breakfast in bed in that standard breakfast in bed tray that my mom had. Did your mom have one of these?
Yeah, we all had them.
Yeah, we had them. And Allison is like, oh, how nice to wake up to breakfast in bed, and my waiter's so cute.
Haley said, you sleep well? And then she says, once we got to sleep, because we were doing it all night.
And Haley's like, Allison, do you love me as much as I love you? And she's like, well, yes, Haley, of course I do. And he says, I want you to spend more time with me. And I'm bracing myself like, if he asks her to marry him, I am going to throw up. And he's like, thankfully, he's like, you know what? I think we should move in together. And I sure as hell am not moving into your place.
Hell no.
I think you should move in here with me.
Mm. And she's like, wow, this is really moving fast. Can I have some time to think about it? And he says, sure. And he's like, but don't think too long.
Now, because I might die because I'm so much older than you. Allison, one thing I've noticed is Allison's eyes are so gorgeous. They used to say that God, what is her name? The Violet Eyes. Who played Cleopatra?
No idea. I can Google it.
Beautiful brunette Elizabeth Taylor. They used to say that she had violet eyes. And I've noticed that Courtney Thorne Smith does have this quality about her eyes where they look almost violet. They look, they're like this light blue that has like a tinge of like, I can't even describe it. It's like a purple blue quality. And in this scene, I was like, whoa, her eyes are like purple looking.
Really?
Yeah. And they used to say Elizabeth Taylor had violet eyes.
I mean, she's got, yeah, she has beautiful eyes. This is the best she's looked.
This season, hands down, like she's gorgeous.
Yeah, I don't know why she's wasting it on chumps like Haley. Probably Viagra ain't even out yet. You know?
Okay. So
probably got some issues.
Next scene, we are back at Disneyland Junior, as you call it.
Disney World Junior.
Oh, sorry. Disney World Junior. Attorneys at law.
Yeah.
And Sydney's sitting there sharpening pencils while Kimberly walks into the office demanding to know where Peter is.
And her job is to sharpen pencils.
That's all she does.
That's it. And file her nails.
And then transfer calls.
Yeah, and listen to them.
And she's getting paid like double under the table from Peter. So anyway, she's like, where's Peter? And Sydney's like, I don't know, you crazy nutcase, but you might want to go check Amanda's place.
Can we talk about what Kimberly is wearing?
Jean on jean.
She looks like a white trash like trucker who just wrestled a pig.
I love it.
She's in.
I love that jean vest.
She's got a cut off denim sleeveless jacket, and it's like exposed
midriff,
and then mom jeans.
Yeah, the high waisted baggy ass jeans.
And Sydney says, "Look who's here! America's favorite homicidal maniac."
So,
oh, it's the best.
Sydney's like, you better go check Amanda's place. They've been spending a lot of time together. And then Kimberly's like, wait, I don't believe you. She tried to have his medical license taken away. Like, that can't be true. And she's like, oh, honey, it's true. You don't think that.
Oh, you poor deluded psycho.
And she's like, you don't think that Peter actually, like, likes you. You don't know about his sister, right?
He's like, she's just using you to work out his problems with his sister's death.
And Kimberly's like, wait, what? And it's very obvious she has no idea about the sister's side story. And she's like, yeah, you should talk to him about it. So Kimberly is
pissed,
distraught, and she leaves kind of in a huff. Sydney, of course, is pleased with like, I got her. But you know what? For Sydney, I'm like, Kimberly tried to kill you.
Yeah, she hates her.
I don't know how you could even be in a room alone with that woman.
You don't come back from a blowtorch to the face.
No, you don't.
Mm-mm. So let's go to Melrose Place. Allison she's packed one bag, and she's like, I'm moving to Haley's.
Moving to big city. So she's leaving her apartment. She's walking out as Billy and Brooke are walking in.
Gotta say, this is a bad move, especially since you work in LA at D&D. Hell of a commute
from Pasadena.
Pasadena to downtown, to not downtown LA. This is like,
I think it's Century City.
This is Century City.
Yeah, I feel like it's in that area.
Easy hour and a half commute.
Oh, if not more.
Yeah.
And so she's leaving, and Billy and Brooke are like, oh, Allison, we missed you at the concept meeting today at work. And she's like, yeah, I had to stay home and pack. And they're like, oh, are you going on a trip? Not exactly.
I'm moving in with your father. But P.S., don't shut him out of your life just because of me. He loves you. She's already talking like a stepmom you fucking hate. You know?
Like, yes!
You know, just call me Allison. You don't have to call me mom.
Dan, your dreams are coming true.
Can't wait.
They are coming true. So you can see all over Brooke's face. She's disgusted.
Was Jerry Springer around this time too?
Oh, hell yeah.
Jerry. On the next Jerry Springer, I had sex with my stepson. Before I married my husband.
Oh, God. Okay. So next scene, we have Peter visiting Amanda at her apartment, and they're kind of like going over what's happening with Jack. And
he's back in the good graces.
No, he even attempts to apologize for trying to murder her probably, what, a year ago? Yeah. Not even. And Amanda's like, shh, I don't want to hear that now. The past is the past. I want to move on. And then their faces start getting very close, and it looks as though they're going to start making out.
And then honky-tonk Kimberly. Hey, Peter!
Peter!
Peter, get your ass down here.
Are you in that bitch's apartment?
God damn it.
Homewrecker!
None of my laundry's done. I got to wear both my jeans.
So Peter goes downstairs and he's like, Kimberly, what are you doing here? Oh, no, you've gone out of bounds and you've set the alarm.
Yeah, her wrist is like, beep, 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 beep.
And within seconds, police officers come to cart her away. And they're like, ma'am, you've violated your probation.
And then Peter's
like, if only this happens.
Peter's like, no, please excuse me, officers. She's under my care. This is fine. And they're like,
bye.
No, it's not. And Kim is like, you lied to me about Amanda and your sister. Look what you've done, Kimberly. You've gone out of range. That's my favorite line. You've gone out of range. Oh, Kimberly's getting locked up.
Oh, God.
This must be traumatizing for anyone at Melrose Place watching, because here we are, Kimberly, at the building, freaking out, and the cops are around.
Well, luckily the cops are there before she can wreak havoc again.
Yeah.
I mean, they just finished the renovation.
I mean, do you remember how long it took for the cops to get there when Michael
Outside of Jane's apartment.
Yeah, like Robert, like
he was able to like get away and they couldn't find him.
Robert had time to like kick his ass, throw him out, and then he had time to get up and go into Sydney's.
This is like, okay, they probably were tracking her right when she veered off course.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, true. True.
Anyway, the next scene.
Amanda sees Peter's like, I gotta go and take care of Kimberly, and this is totally contradictory to what Amanda has just heard from Peter, that he'll be around, he won't leave her side, like he's there for the long haul. So she has this realization at the top of her French Quarter doors that, like, you know, Peter's overselling.
He may not be there for her unconditionally all the time.
Right.
Now, very next scene, we are back at Peter's house with Kimberly, which is almost alarming because you're like, oh, last scene she was being carted off by the police. And Peter is like, Kimberly, if I wasn't able to talk that judge into allowing you to come back to my house under my care, you'd be in jail now.
You betrayed me.
And, but did he betray her?
Well, she didn't know anything about his sister.
But does she? I mean, Dan, how many people have, like, I lost my mom to cancer, and that event made me want to do cancer research? Then do all of the people that are benefiting from their cancer research, but you're doing it because your mom died from cancer, right, not because right. You want to help me. It's, well, like, does it? I think everybody gets into their passions in life because something happens.
But, you know, she didn't jump off a building because Peter said that he loved her. You know?
Dan, I do not. But Peter has been very clear throughout her recovery that he does not want to have a relationship with her. It is strictly platonic. It is strictly patient and doctor.
Yeah.
I don't think he is at all leading her astray. He does deeply care for her. And I don't think there's anything wrong making a pledge to yourself to say, because my sister basically died in an institution because there's nobody that could stand up for her and really act as her advocate, I'm not going to let that happen to other people with mental health issues.
He should have become a dentist. Some teeth, some chompers are on display.
Look,
in this scene.
Okay, it's just his bottom row. They're not.
I think he chews tobacco. I really do. Because the bottom row is kind of.
That's back in the 90s, too. You could have imperfections. You didn't have to be this perfect plastic specimen in order to get on television.
Oh, I think there's some middle ground between perfect teeth and fucking Dr. Burns's and shit. Perfect teeth and shit teeth. Like, you can get in the middle there. He is.
But I'm saying nowadays he could never be on TV with teeth like that.
No, I think he fixed them. That's why he's
on
all those.
That's what I'm saying. He's on all those Hallmark movies.
Yeah, he's
with Jodie Bissett.
He's missing a lower tooth, and they're. And he's putting the sun out of
you
business.
You are really focusing in on this.
I'm using jokes from elementary school.
Okay.
You put the sun out of business.
Okay, so Kimberly is upset. She thinks he's using her. She doesn't want to be under his care. She doesn't want his help.
And Peter comes to the realization that Sydney told her about his sister.
Sydney is the one that let the cat out of the bag. She's the one that started this whole fire. So Kimberly's like, leave. I'd leave if I was allowed to, but I can't. Get out of my sight. So Peter exits the premises.
Now let's head on over to Shooter's.
Or Joe Complain Place, as you like to say.
Joe strolls into her complain zone.
And she's like, hey, guess what? She loves taking Jake. Like, she loves making Jake ditch work. She's like, you're coming with me. I got a date with you with some hot dogs and beer and the Rose Bowl.
I'd be like, sweetie, that like sounds great. But again,
I'm working.
I'm at work.
Why are you going to the Rose Bowl?
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a game.
I don't know.
The football game.
Okay.
They're going to see the Trojans.
College. They don't play there.
Yeah, they do. Oh, yeah, they play at the Coliseum.
Yeah.
UCLA, they play the Rose Bowl. And they use the Rose Bowl for, like, big games.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
So they, but the thing is, he was supposed to have worked with Shelly on the computer stuff. Mm-hmm. That day. So Shelly's in his office, and I think you brought this up a couple of episodes ago, but his office is enormous.
It's massive.
It used to be like a broom closet, and now it's like, welcome to my palatial expansive office. And Shelly's just sitting there like, hi, are you ready to learn computers yet? And Jake is like, actually, Shelly, I'm gonna cut out now, but I'll come back. And Shelly's like, are you sure? Don't you want to stay and learn about computers? And he's like, no. It makes me feel like Shelly's up to something. She's doing something bad with the computers.
This is a mouse. These are cords.
This is a mouse pad.
All right. We are at Peter's place with Kimberly. Kimberly, she's watching TV. And she's waiting. She's waiting for something.
She has a baseball bat in her hand.
Mm-hmm.
She's waiting for fake Henry, Mirror Buddy, to come back so she can confront him.
She sees Henry outside, and she just gets up and opens the door. And again, she's in jeans and like a halter. Is that what you call them?
Yeah, you're not digging this look?
No, but I think that they put her in the jeans because maybe I'm looking too far into it. I think they put her in like those jeans because she's like
more pedestrian.
Or like the no more victims. Like she's ready to fight. She's in fight clothes.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. I like your white trash angle better.
Yeah. So
she's not a doctor anymore.
He's the fake Henry rolls up and he's like, hello.
And she just comes out and raises the bat. And he's like, ah, no. Yeah. So he tries to get away. He's running from her.
She flings the bat at him and misses.
They end up in the backyard where the pool is and all these sprinklers are going.
When he runs, he reminds me of Borat.
He's very long and lanky.
And he's like running and he slips. Like he, the sprinkler's trips. Going.
Yeah.
And the hose is all tangled up and he slips on the hose and falls. Kimberly chases after him, jumps on it. First kicks him in the stomach.
And then she jumps on top of him. All the while, the sprinklers are making it rain down on the both of them. There's this great shot of like looking up at her, and it's from his vantage point where she's like, who are you? Why are you doing this to me?
Henry is such a bitch.
And he's like, oh, don't hurt me anymore. It's like, what are you talking about? She just chased after you. She rips off his beard and his mustache.
And he's like, ow.
And she's like, who? Did they hire you? Was it Michael and Sydney? He's like, yeah, it was Michael and Sydney. I'm sorry.
They paid me to scare
you. I didn't want to do this, but they gave me money.
He sucks. I'm so disappointed in him. He had to have been getting paid a lot. You know, you could at least try to.
I don't know.
Keep it up.
Well, okay, then she's like, oh, I'm so happy. And he's like, you're happy? She's like, yeah, so happy I can kiss you. And she leans down and plants one on him.
And so she lets him run off, and then she's just like dancing in the sprinkler. Like
I'm not crazy.
I'm not crazy. I've done it. And then we cut away. Kimberly is vindicated. She's back. So now we go back to Wilshire Memorial. It's code blue. They're calling for Dr. Burns. Dr. Burns, he rushes in.
And Amanda's there again, by the way.
Amanda's there again. Jack is going into cardiac arrest.
This could be it, guys.
So Burns and Amanda somehow both go in to, like,
to the room where they get the paddles out and they're trying to shock his heart back. And we're getting just beep, just the flat line. And then still after several attempts of just shocking him, we finally get a heartbeat back.
They saved him.
And everyone's like, oh, we have a heartbeat. He's alive. He's alive. We saved him. And then, of course, the camera goes over to Amanda where she's just completely devastated. And she's like, why can't he die?
She's like, damn it, let him die.
And that is where we end this ep.
So, Jenny, recap this thing for us, will ya?
Jack falls over a third-story railing and is in serious condition at the hospital. Joe and Richard are getting flirty. Kimberly discovers that fake Henry has been hired to torment her by Michael and Sydney. Jack and Michael both commit to cover up Amanda's role in Jake's fall. Allison moves into Haley's house. Brooke is beginning a pregnancy trap. Matt Fielding's senior funeral happens. And Matt's mom announces that he is going back to medical school. Amanda and Peter are getting close again. Kimberly finds out that Peter has been caring for her to work out his own demons.
Oh boy. 90s moments. I've got the coffee pot.
Yeah. That hunter green carpet in Jack's mansion. There was like back in the 90s, like hunter green and like plaid was a thing.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Kimberly's jukebox radio.
Brooke and Billy's awful purple sheets.
Kimberly's cordless phone.
Brooke using a diaphragm as birth control.
just the big ordeal with like moving accounting and payroll to one computer.
Ooh. Amanda's big, baggy, high-waisted jeans with a thick belt and midriff shirt, which Kimberly rocked a lot, too, as we talked.
Michael's car phone.
Shelly's choker necklace with the Southwestern-inspired enormous pendant.
Beautiful. Did you already say just calling into a radio show?
No, but that's a good one.
Yeah. Calling into a live radio show for advice. God, I loved Love Line.
Me too. That's what I'm saying.
Who's from back east?
Back to the 90s.
WHFS 99.1.
Oh.
Love Line. I'm talking Adam Carolla.
Oh, I know Kevin knows this.
Dr. Drew. That was the shit.
Yeah.
Like the original Love Line. Not the podcast, not the TV show on MTV, the calls.
It was great.
10 o'clock at night.
I remember being like 12 and 13, and like that's really how I learned a lot about sex.
It was great.
It was great.
And like women would call and be like, "Hi, my name is Sheila."
And they'd always be
and
like,
"And Adam be like, what'd your dad do to you?"
Yeah. Every time.
Immediately.
Oh, all right, Dan. So each episode.
Oh, I got one more.
Oh, my God.
Allison's non-rolly luggage.
You outdid yourself.
Thank you. And the print on it.
Oh, the floral.
Yeah. Floral luggage that doesn't roll.
Oh, yeah.
If you would stop traffic if you were wearing that, if you were holding that.
My parents still have luggage that looks like that.
Yikes. Christmas present.
So, every episode has a lesson. Dan, what did you learn?
No roughhousing near a banister.
That's a good one.
Your parents always warn you not to like mess around there.
Yeah.
Especially fight. If you're going to fight somebody, do it on the first floor. Don't get barrel rolled off the
sage advice. That's really good stuff.
Be careful, guys. You could hit the ground and not crack your skull.
But Jack didn't crack his skull or his face. His face is completely gorgeous and there's nothing wrong with it.
But he had bleeding on the brain.
That's true.
What's your lesson?
I just say just call the cops. Like this whole, we have to keep this secret and get a conspiracy where everyone has to like put their livelihood and their life on the line in order to cover something up that doesn't need to be covered up and is already out in the open anyway.
Yeah, who cares about the insurance fraud?
Who cares?
You'll do a couple weeks in blue collar
or
white collar
prison. Won't,
or
you won't. Or you're like, I was afraid for my life. I had to run.
Yeah.
I don't know. So,
and with Melrose Place time, you'll be out in
5 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ain't nothing. As long as Matt's not on your case, he'll fuck the whole thing up. I'm going to go investigate this trip.
Now it's time for
Bitch of the Week.
I'm a boss ass bitch. Bitch, 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 bitch. I'm a boss.
Last week,
bitch,
I said that Amanda was the bitch. And Jenny said that Henry 2.0, Mark Paul, was the bitch. And with a vote of 9-6, it was close. I finally got it back. Amanda is the bitch of the week.
Congratulations, Daniel. How does it feel to be back on top?
Feels good. Feels goddamn good. Thank you all.
Well, let's see what you guys said. Donald kicks us off by saying, did anyone notice in the first scene with Allison and Haley, she's like, I feel so good. I feel so great here. I feel so safe to be here. Like nothing can ever happen to you when you're on a boat. And then I said out loud, well, tell that to Joe.
Oh,
just something I found ironic.
Boom.
I thought I would share that. Anyway, my vote this week will have to be fake Henry. Honestly, honestly, how desperate do you have to be to take a job like this? I mean, he's terrorizing a woman he knows nothing about. It's clearly not an acting job. So why would he take it to such a bizarre and really strange? And he is the kind of creepy and perfect for the role, ironically. So I had to vote for him. As for my comment last week, I wasn't trying to be mean to Dan. And anyway, I'm now kind of seeing this point because I really don't like Allison with Haley. It's kind of cringeworthy when they're on sunscreen because of them kissing and how old he is. Just really creepy. But I like that it makes Brooke mad because she deserves it. So one can say I'm kind of conflicted about that. Anyway, great episode, guys. Can't wait for the next one. Thank you, Donald.
Thanks, Donald. Tara says, my vote goes to Amanda. What happened to Amanda? We went from bitch from hell to being a total pushover. Amanda can suck it up. Take back your bitch power and give it right back to the likes of Brooke, who deserves it.
Jamie says, Henry 2.0 has my vote. How messed up and desperate as an actor do you have to be to take the job of stalking a mental patient? Amanda is pathetic and deserves no recognition. There you go.
Nikki says, Amanda's the bitch because she has let Billy inside her and didn't crack those eggs to make eggs. And please start a hotline.
Oh, God.
Yeah. The hotline.
Okay. Gregory says,
if you're going to make some eggs, you got to crack some eggs. Am I right?
That's exactly how that saying goes.
We're going to get t-shirts done up.
You got to make some eggs. You got to crack some eggs.
Yeah. You want to make eggs? You got to crack eggs.
Okay. So Gregory says, come on, you guys, let's get real. Amanda has entered and won this contest many times in the past for deeds way worse than turning into a pushover. She's not the bitch this time around. Mark Paul is. That guy is a horrible human being. He gets paid to stalk, harass, and terrorize a woman he doesn't even know. Even for Melrose Place standards, it is pretty low. And Dan and Jenny, remembering all of Allison's past lovers, how could you forget Terry Oakes?
Oh, shit.
What's wrong with us?
Did she fuck Terry?
The twin Oakes. I don't know, but
she,
I mean,
she did. Yeah, she did.
He is definitely on the list. I can't believe we forgot Twin Oaks.
Oh, wow. Allison has had sex with the most people on Melrose Place.
Oh, God.
The Oaks. That's right. He shamed her into it. Wow. I just relived every Terry scene.
I just remembered that scene where he like shoves her face underwater in the sink in her room.
Come on, get it out of there. Oh, wow.
Okay, Dan, since you're the reigning champion this week, will you grace us with your bitch of the week pick?
Dude, it was tough. It was tough. I know I would pick a group of people, but I can't.
Can you elaborate?
Well, I would have said all of the tenants of Melrose Place.
Because they didn't go to Matt's dad's funeral?
Yeah.
Oh!
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fucked up. Like, no one went. No one. And they didn't even call back. Like, maybe they could have called back. Like, you could have mentioned Rhonda. Like,
or
yeah,
maybe, like,
nice for Rhonda to show up.
That was, you know what? That's a great idea. That's a really good point.
Good seeing Rhonda.
I mean, it's really nice that Sandy came all the way back.
Not even, like, what was his boy with AIDS name?
Oh.
He didn't even go.
What is his name? Why are we like...
I don't know.
We are messing up.
What was his name? He cut his hand on the sink.
Damn, this is so bad. We are not the experts.
It wasn't Paul. He's dead. I don't know.
Fuck, I can't even think of it.
The guy from all the Chicago shows. Chicago Fire, Chicago PD, Chicago Lawnmowers. He's in all the Chicago shows.
Okay, so who is really going to get your pick this week?
My pick for bitch is Jake Hansen.
What?
Yo. This guy is such a bitch. He is playing games with Joe. He's still parading Shelly around. If you like Joe, then get with Joe. Stop having Shelly show up at shooters. Like, get someone else to fucking set you up with a computer. You know, don't go over to her place. I apologize from last episode. That was her place. They did not go to Jake's place.
Thank you.
I concede.
It was her place.
It was her place. But still, Jake, don't. He brings her into his life the second Joe is like, I have to go to the bathroom. And then he takes offense. He's like, Shelly, come on. Let's go have dinner. It's fucked up. And I mean, I know I'm talking about a couple of things that happened in previous episodes, but it all comes to a boil here. He told Shelly she couldn't work at Shooters anymore. What happened to that? Then he tells her, we can't kiss. And he kisses her. Then he's like, Shelly, you need to find another job. She's back there hooking up his computer in his office. What is going on, man? You cannot play with people's minds like this. It's fucked up. Don't employ her. And stop going to her damn house. Jake's a bitch.
Welp. In my opinion, Dan, the real bitch of this episode is none other than Jack Parisi.
Ooh.
Oh, honey. This guy has the gall to make up a fake fiance, somehow roping Amanda into coming to his house unaccompanied, which she does. Then he literally has planned out her rape. He planned out her rape, having the lingerie that she wore on her wedding night laid out on the bed, ready for her to slip into it.
I'm going
to
rape you in this.
Honestly, I'm not trying to make fun of it, but it is super sick and twisted. He lured her there for the sole purpose to take advantage of her, to rape her, and then to basically put her into slavery. He's like, you're never going to get away from me. You're going to be with me forever. If you leave me, I will kill you. I mean, if that is not a bitchy thing to do to someone else, I don't know what is. And then even after he falls off of the balcony, he's in critical condition on his deathbed, he still musters the strength to threaten her further, to say, you are mine. When I am fully recovered, I'm taking you back, and I will kill you.
I'm gonna kill your ass.
So, guys, I think it's pretty obvious. Jack Parisi, bitch of the week.
Hey, Mr. Parisi, you're the bitch of this week. Honorable mention, bitch, to Brooke.
Trying to get the pregnancy in.
Trying to mess with.
Trying to give that trap to.
Come on. The trap move. Trying to get Billy's babies. Ugh. Ugh. Yucky.
Well, guys, you know it's the ball's in your court. Go on to Facebook. Let us know what you think. Was it Jake Hansen or was it Jack Parisi?
Jack versus Jake.
Weigh in.
Now, this episode was called Dial M for Melrose. We can do better.
Why do you always say that?
Because
I am never claiming to do better.
I try to do better. I've done better a couple of times.
Okay.
What do you think?
I'm going to call this episode Falling for You. Because I think everyone knows who fell. But then we have a couple budding romances that are going on. We have Haley and Allison falling for each other. And I would argue Richard's falling for Joe.
Nice. I like that.
Do you?
Yeah, it's good.
Okay, what do you have?
Well, I stuck with the movie take. Mm-hmm. I got two. I had two this week.
Oh, double duty.
So they said Dial M for Murder. My first one is One Flew Over the Railing. Which is a nod to One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Oh, I think we got it.
And then my other one is The Boy Who Could Fly.
All right, good stuff.
Thanks.
Good stuff.
Did I do better?
Yes.
Thank you.
You did.
Thanks.
Okay, so what do we think are going to happen in future episodes?
I think that Richard's going to go full on for Joe. I think that Haley is playing Allison. I think his move is to like get her to move out of Melrose Place so that she's away from Brooke.
He's already done that.
Already did it. So like now she's out of Melrose Place, and then he's going to be like, dump Billy and I'll dump Allison.
Mm-hmm.
Jack will die. He's got to die, right? I think Kimberly is now free and clear. She may even start working again at Wilshire.
She might.
She's totally out. She's totally free now that she's broken the chains of Peter. I think Billy starts getting sick of Brooke. You can already tell.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he gets back with Amanda. Maybe there's one last straw with Jack, and Billy's like, hey, pal, now that you can't move, why don't you suck on this?
Ew! What is that referring to?
Like a pillow. Like he's going to suffocate.
You're going to suck on a pillow?
Yeah.
Okay.
So maybe he gets back with Amanda. I think Kimberly will get even with Sydney because of all the shit that Sydney's been talking to her lately. And I think Peter's going to fire Sydney for spilling the beans.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Matt will become a doctor in 3 episodes.
Okay. I agree. Jack has to die. Like, this is getting really old really
quick.
Get him
dead.
Or
done.
His reinforcement, his cronies, his dangerous friends, they need to come in. We need to get some new blood in here. We need to get some new characters. They need to mix it up.
Yeah.
Maybe some other threats. So either he dies or more characters have to come in. I think that Haley and Allison will get engaged in the next episode. Next episode, engaged. Yep. Mark my words. Brooke and Billy break up, but they stay together for the baby. Break
you
up.
You think they get pregnant?
They break up. Brooke is like, oh, but Billy, I'm pregnant. And then they're like, well, we got to make a family. So I think
be Billy's second baby scare.
Well, we'll see. And then I think Matt, of course, as we said before, he's going to be a doctor at Wilshire Memorial by the end of this season. And I think that somehow Kimberly is going to flip the script on Michael and Sydney. I think she is going to get them at their own game. She's going to somehow like trick them into thinking that she is crazy and do something insane.
Mm-hmm.
And then like get even with them. And then I feel like there's something very telling about Shelley when she was like, are you sure you don't want to stay here and learn about computers? Like, I feel like she then somehow double crosses Jake.
Hmm.
And we'll see what that is in the next step.
Yeah. What's she doing there?
I don't know, but she needs to go. She's annoying.
And the whole baby storyline, it's stupid because we know for a fact
no one's having a baby.
No baby is hanging out at Melrose Place.
No.
It's not happening. Ever. So that's it for us.
Dan, we got a new review. Ooh. On Apple Podcasts.
Thanks, guys.
AmesDB80 says, best podcast ever. They write, Jenny and Dan do a great job recapping Melrose Place. They are hilarious. Aww. And I legit laugh out loud each episode. My absolute favorite is Dan's Billy impression. I can't get enough. Definitely recommend this podcast for everyone. Thank you.
Thanks for reviewing our podcast.
Dan, you are on point with those
Oh, well, thank you.
Impressions. I forgot what they're called. I am so tired.
No one gives me love for what was his name? Terrence.
Because
he's probably one of my favorites.
What?
Rhonda, baby.
My favorite is Kay Bacon.
Oh, God. The Kay spinoff. Did I tell you about that?
Did you talk about it on the podcast? You did tell me about it.
I pitched the idea in the Facebook group.
Why don't you tell everybody about your idea for the spinoff?
Okay. Well, if you missed the post, here it is. We have a spinoff show starring Kay Bacon and Richard Hart. They are two designers, top designers, going head to head in a show called loosely America's Next Top Model.
It's based off of that.
Right.
Not America's Next. It's Project Runway.
Project Runway, yeah. So they're
Project Runway style show.
Right, but it is also a mockumentary.
So they have teams of people trying to design under their fashion houses, but it's like the office style where people are like looking into the
camera
and talking. It's
behind the scenes of the makings of the show. And guys, this will win Emmy after Emmy after Emmy.
I am on board. After you told me this, I was like, let's get Kay Bacon on the horn.
It'd be like that show that you watch about is behind the scenes of like The Bachelor.
Unreal.
Yeah.
God, it's so good. If you have not seen Unreal, go watch it immediately. If you like Melrose Place, you will love Unreal.
But don't watch it if you haven't watched Melrose Place. Keep watching Melrose Place and listening to us.
There's some room for more things.
Yeah, true. So we are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Melrose Pod. Follow us on all of that stuff. And request to join our secret cool Facebook group so that you can vote for Bitch of the Week every week. There's a link to that group in our show notes. You can email us, melrosepod@gmail.com. Let us know what's going on. And we're on Patreon, patreon.com/melrosepod. If you feel so inclined to give us a buck, we would appreciate it.
We love smut.
And we love you.